The Church of God, the Eternal, presents Belief in God, the second message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled, Why Keep the Feast? Given for the afternoon service of the first high day of the Feast of Tabernacles, in Yahats, Oregon, October 17th, 2024.
Special greetings to all of you on this afternoon of the first high day of Tabernacles. And again, our prayers are with all of you wherever you are around the world. You are part of God's scattered flock, prophesied to endure unto the very end, and we believe we're part of that. And it is certainly a blessing then to be a service to every single one of you who cares about those holy things which God has and entrusted into the hands of certain ones in these particular days. As much as the world is getting darker yet, what an inspiration for the light being shined by every single one of you who believes this way of life and who is practicing it by putting those things literally into fulfillment day by day. So I introduced last night for the opening of this Feast of Tabernacles my overall theme, which is in the form of a question, why keep the feast? And so we began last night with addressing probably the number one answer for those who are part of the church and who care about the feast and are keeping it. Why keep the feast? Because God said so. And certainly that makes sense. So what further explanation might we give, however, in this answer? And in fact, what I'm going to do this afternoon, I want to back up from keeping the feast because God commands it. There's something implied in that answer, however. I could have put this first in opening night, but no, I wanted to tackle the issue of the command first. And then this afternoon, we want to back up. Because if you care about God's commandments, then it must mean that you fundamentally believe, first and foremost, that he exists. Is that not true? So one legitimate answer could have been, remember I posed the question when somebody asks you, or if somebody asks you, why do you keep going to that religious retreat every year? You could have said, because I believe in God. Instead, you probably said, because God commands it, but that presumes a belief in a God who has commandments, does it not? But again, my intent this feast is not to assume the simple things. I want to take those simple things and show you how they are relevant, not only as a reminder to why we are doing what we're doing, but to expand upon that in the hopes that it will help you in your personal walk with God, in your faith, in your conviction, and in holding on to the very end. So you believe that there is a God who has commandments, and these commandments are important to keep, which is why you keep the feast. But let's talk this afternoon about our belief in God. Now, I covered this topic 5 years ago, the feast in 2019. I did it under a totally different theme. I'm going to repeat some of that material. I hope that's not too repetitive for some of you, since it was 5 years ago. But I think it's very relative and hopefully beneficial. How many human beings actually believe in God? Many claim that they believe in God, and there's all kinds of religions upon the face of this earth. But there's also an increasing number of people who say they don't believe in God. What is God? What is religion? Religions, you see, are talking about some form of a belief system. So, are you religious? And a lot of people will say, well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious, which is really a bunch of nonsense. Typically, those people are trying to distinguish between organized religion versus their sense of being personally religious. Now, they call that spiritual. Well, the occult world is spiritual as well, and I'm not getting into all of the pagan religions, but there's a whole lot of spiritualism going on in the world and increasing all the time under the auspices of our enemy, Satan the devil. But I'm going to call it all religion, because it is all religion. A religion, the word religion just simply means a belief system. Are you religious? Yes, you are. Every human being on the earth is religious, because every single human being on the earth, whether they want to, whether they admit it or not, they do have a belief system. That's all religion is. Now, organized religion isn't something totally different, but religion on its own just means you believe something. And even if you don't care to believe anything, you still believe something. You have a belief system, like it or not. Everyone believes something. Everyone has a belief system, so everyone is religious, whether they admit it or not. The only question is, what is your religion? What is your religion? As I mentioned to you, as I recorded 5 years ago, I tried to look up these statistics about world religions. I think it's still tracking about the same, at least with what is being published or what I see. I didn't see a lot of updated numbers. But in that regard, about 31% of the world population claims to be Christian in one form or another, accepting Jesus Christ in some way as their God. And by comparison with all the other religions, only about 16% of people in the world claim to have no religious belief, including being agnostic, meaning I don't know if there's a God or not, but I really don't care, to being outright atheistic, which is not believing at all in a supreme being with conscious authority over what happens in the universe. So regardless, let's say there's 16% approximately, I don't know if that's increased, decreased. Spiritualism is probably increasing in the world. But of those who actually claim not to believe in a higher power, let's say 15, 16% of the world population, and yet they are still religious, because everybody has a belief system. If you are not, or if someone claims not to be religious, what are they really saying? They typically mean they're not a part of an organized religion. What they're really saying is they don't believe that they are accountable to a higher power. Somebody that says they're not religious probably do not consider a higher power is affecting their lives or their decisions. So the question is, though, but they have a belief system, who do they serve? Well, I don't serve anyone. Yeah, you do. Part of having a belief system, there is service involved. It is linked inexorably. So beyond just saying what's your belief system, let me say, who do you serve? Everyone has a God. And in that regard, I'm just going to define God as simply a primary force. However people in the world define what they think is God or call God or pray to or don't pray to, everyone has a God, because everyone has a primary force that affects their lives. It affects every human's ideas and their personal decisions. Because again, they have a belief system, and therefore a primary force of some kind is a part of their belief system. The only question is, what is the driving force in a human life? What's the driving force in your life? Most people in the world actually practice humanism as their religion. Even if they claim a denomination of some organized religion, down deep inside, what they're really practicing is humanism. Whether they admit it or not. And the reason I say that with absolute assurance, authority, if you will, is because that's the way we are by nature. We as human beings are hardwired to be humanist. Another way to say that is to worship human beings and especially ourselves. First and foremost, by nature, we serve ourselves. That's what it means to be selfish. And if the primary force, the impetus in your life, which you give deference to, and how you think and the choices that you make, has to do with taking care of yourself, that is called selfish, but it's also called humanistic, because yourself happens to be a human. Does that make sense? Whether on an organized basis, a dictionary basis or not, I don't care. But by natural inclination, we are humanists. So then there's a whole lot of smart people in the world who are declared humanists. They don't apologize for that. They absolutely do not believe in a higher intelligent power. They don't believe in any God, so they say. And so they believe that human beings, in essence, are alone in the universe, left with the obligation, the necessity, to take care of ourselves, to make our own choices, to try to make our own future with no help from an outside power. And they're not ashamed of that. And so they are absolutely humanists. Humanism, a dictionary definition, is an outlook or a system of thought attaching prime importance to human rather than divine or supernatural matters. Humanist beliefs stress the potential value and goodness of human beings. Humanist beliefs stress the potential value and goodness of human beings and emphasize common human needs and seek solely rational ways of solving human problems. Human beings are left unto their own, they believe, and therefore we have to fend for ourselves and solve our own problems. But again, as you saw in this definition, there's also underlying a belief that human beings can be good on their own. Human endeavor, if it's just structured in the right way, can be good. And I would also tell you, my dear friends, that it's also the very basis of socialistic and communistic belief. You would not have anybody attaching themselves to communism in this world if they did not have an underlying belief that there is a way for human beings in a right social structure to create paradise on this earth. They are looking for a socialistic utopia, a paradise. But the difference is they're not depending upon a God like Jesus Christ to come back and to take over and to rule as king like you and I are expecting, which is the meaning of this 7-day Feast of Tabernacles. No, they see a different utopia, a different paradise, and it doesn't have a God in it at all. It just has a collective of human beings all working together in the right structure, creating a blissful, happy ending for all of us, where everybody has everything that they need. Nobody is selfish. There are not haves and have-nots. We're all equal comrades. And we share and share alike. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. Those who have greater abilities by nature, offer up the full measure of those abilities in service of the collective. And those who can produce less still share equally in the results. That's communism. And it's satanic, by the way. If you didn't know that, it is. Because God's system, the true God, his system is one of is a meritocracy. It's a reward according to how much you produce. It's measuring based upon the fruits of individual choice. So humanism, which translates in this as communistic belief, really treats man as God. And it's why your communistic societies ultimately try to expunge organized religion. The Chinese did it, the Soviets did it, all of them do it because they don't want another foreign god or a religion competing with the god they have established, meaning the communistic state, and human beings collectively become the god. They believe man has no power, or man has the power to create his own future paradise. Success or failure for the human race is up to us. Of course, they just believe, well, we need some super wise leaders to guide us there. And that's why you have these figureheads that rise up. So it's rooted in a lie. It's rooted in a lie that human beings, one, have the power and the ability, and that human nature itself can be guided and molded and shaped in a way that we can all live in a paradise on our own. That's humanism. Now, what is the truth? Proverb 21, verse 2. Proverb 21, verse 2 says, every way of a man is right in his own eyes. Every humanistic thought, every individual who says, I have a brain, I have a mind, I have experience, I have experimentation in the world, and I put all these facts together, and I have the means to chart my own course and to make my own future happy. God says every way of a man is right in his own eyes, and boy, that is true, and we bear it out. We as human beings believe that because we trust ourselves. But the Eternal ponders the hearts. God knows the heart. And because the one true God made us, he knows what makes us tick. He knows how we think. He knows what our motivations are. He knows what our gods are. He knows we serve ourselves. He knows we bow and scrape before our own identities and our own desires and our lusts. Philippians 3, verse 18. Philippians 3, 18, for many walk, of whom I have told you often and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ. And this is all the more sad because the Apostle Paul is speaking about ones who knew better and now have turned to this diabolical orientation of mind. They were introduced to the one true God. They even embraced it for some amount of time, and now they've walked away and renounced it. But there are those then, either because they've always been that way, because they're deceived in this world and have not yet been enlightened, or else they've become the enemies of Christ and what he stands for. They are the enemies of the cross of Christ. Verse 19, what's the end result of someone who is a humanist, anti-God, anti-true God, and remains that way and doesn't repent or relent? Whose end is destruction? Whose God is nothing? They don't have a God at all? No, they have a God. Their God is their belly. Their God is their belly, meaning whatever entices them. They have a hunger, they're going to feed it. They have a desire, they're going to fill it. They have a want, which they call a need or a must-have, and they're going to get it. Whatever they desire, whatever they demand, they're going to rationalize a way to say it's good for them to fill it. Whatever I want is a good thing. and the wants of human beings are becoming more and more depraved on the whole. Whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. So they're not looking for some hidden future of glory sponsored by an invisible God. They have no faith or confidence in that whatsoever. No, they only believe what they can hold, handle, or prove on this earth. And the guiding principle which they serve is their belly, their appetites. That's their religion. I stop and ask you again, what's your religion? Because I don't assume, and not only those who will hear this message in the future, long after the Feast of Tabernacles in 2024, but even among some who are part of the congregations assembled, because there are also ones who are not members who may be coming with family. And I'll put a special emphasis even upon children. And I'm not necessarily just saying young children, but ones who are children of members of the church who are also at the feast. And so my message to you, because if this is just your parents' religion, okay, not yours, I get that. And again, part of our doctrine of this church is the fact that you shouldn't just go along with a belief because it's someone else's. Because our God, the God we believe in and know is true, requires every individual to make his or her own choice on what you believe is true. And he does look upon the heart, and he does know. And if you're just going along out of habit because you were raised in the church and you've always come to the feast because your parents have always dragged you to the feast, still, then I ask you to think seriously for yourself. What is your religion? Not what's mom's religion, what's dad's religion, or aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa. What's your religion? Oh, I don't have a religion. Yes, you do. What do you believe? What is your belief system? What is the driving force that you are serving or think is good or right or okay to serve? You have a driving force. What is it? There's an old song. I'm not going to tell you where it's from. Basically says, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. And so I say to all of you, even if you say, I'm not going to choose a religion, I'm not going to get involved in it, you still have made a choice and you are serving something. There's something driving you and you are serving it. What is it? Philippians 3, verse 18. We just read that. Who mind earthly things, whose God is their belly, whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. So if you're one, if you're making your decisions according to whatever you want to do personally, then your God is your belly. You say you don't have a religion? I would say, yeah, you do. Your God is your belly. Jeremiah 10, verse 23. Jeremiah 10, verse 23, O eternal, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his steps. This is the pronouncement of someone who does believe in a higher power outside of man. Do you? It is not in man that walks to direct his steps. This is anti-humanist. The humanist says it is within man's power to direct his own steps. We just have to get rid of the mistakes and learn through our experiences to adopt the right wisdom to create our own paradise. But the truth is, it is not within man that walks to direct his steps. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 11. 1 Corinthians 2:11 says, "For what man knows the things of a man save the spirit of man which is in him?" Which is an awkward way to basically say, what man knows, understands, can comprehend, and can prove are the things that come with the capacity of the human mind. That comes from the spirit in man. That just means the essence that God put in human beings that makes you different from an animal. Animals and humans both have brains, but the animal does not have a mind. You were born with a mind. In fact, you had your mind when you were still in the womb. I don't know at what point in the womb that the mind actually switches on. The physical brain has to develop first, and then the mind within the brain. God knows, he's the one that created that marvelous process. But at some point, the human mind switches on. Never happens in an animal, as they don't have it. And then that's what makes you a human being. What man knoweth the things of a man? How do you understand like animals do not? How do you absorb knowledge through study and through experience, and then use that to make future choices? Animals can in a very limited, primitive way. they learn by bad results, don't do that again. But not the way human beings have the mental capacity. What man knows the things of man save the spirit of man which is in him? It's because you have a mind. Even so that physical fact that the humanists love certainly to capitalize upon. Look at our mental capacity. Whoa, aren't we so special? Look what we can achieve. And they achieve wonderful, awesome things, but not in comparison to the truth of the universe. But God uses that through the Apostle Paul to teach us something about a different realm, his realm. Even so, the things of God knoweth no man, but the Spirit of God. So what God is telling us is, in the same way, your mental capacity to understand and to reason is so much higher than the animal plane. The same is true about the difference between human beings and the God plane. The God plane of knowledge and wisdom and understanding is light years ahead of your human capacity. Far greater than the difference between your level and that of an animal. But I can't prove that to you. It's another one of those things that God makes us accept on faith. And if you refuse to accept anything on faith, you're only going to make your decisions, your religion, according to what you can prove using the scientific method or whatever else on this earth. That's your religion. And now you've just boxed yourself in to only a portion of the wisdom and the knowledge available in the universe. But I guarantee you it is true. The God plane exists, a whole spirit realm that is invisible to you and to me. And it is a driving force, a primary force, we call God, that brought into existence everything that is a part of your physical world. That God is real. And he didn't just create it and then go off on vacation. He's actually actively involved in managing his creation for his own purposes and end. And you're a part of that. Whether you want to be or not, whether you want to acknowledge him or not, you're a part of it. And by the way, you were created in his image. So you look like God whether you want to or not. That's like trying to disavow your biological mom or dad. And yet very often, your physical appearance tells the tale. In the same regard, so is God as your father, because you were made in his image, like it or not. What's the real result of the humanist religion which denies the existence of that God? 2 Peter 2, verse 12. 2 Peter 2, 12 says, "But these as natural brute beasts." Oh, they have minds that make them smarter, wiser, more capable than a beast, but in the final analysis, because of their humanistic philosophy, they don't end up any better than the beasts. "These as natural brute beasts made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of things that they understand not." And what's the end result of this ignorant humanistic philosophy in those who deny a great God? "And shall utterly perish in their own corruption." The end result of human life without the intervention of an active, powerful God, they will die and they will go back to the dust from which they came. So you can pick any religion that you want, but anything but the one true religion is going to result in you being here today and gone tomorrow. You'll go back to the dirt. I guess there's worse things that can happen, right? If the worst thing that happens, you go back to the dirt. But if you're okay with having this and only this for as many years or as many decades as you get to live, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Okay, I'm going to go out and try and experience every possible thing I can to make myself happy. King Solomon did that. He wrote a whole book about it called Ecclesiastes, by the way. He also wrote, by the inspiration of God, the book of Proverbs, which has a lot about the things that make human beings happy versus the things that make human beings sad, called wisdom. But see, those things come from the invisible God. So if you don't believe or acknowledge the invisible God, then you have to dismiss all of that. And you're going to make your decisions based upon your own religion, your own primary driving force. You're going to serve yourself. You're going to fill your belly with whatever you think, whatever you want. And you'll be willing to change your religion on the drop of a hat if you change what you want and what you desire. Oh, I used to believe this, but now I believe this. Because I used to want this, but now I want this. The one thing that hasn't changed, you're still serving yourself. You're still bowing and scraping before a human being. Look in the mirror and you'll see who it is. If the true God does not intervene on this earth, what is going to be the outcome for the human family? Mark 13, verse 19. Mark 13, beginning in verse 19. Jesus Christ speaking. So if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you won't believe what he said is true here, but I'm telling you it is. Here's what he said. "For in those days shall be affliction, such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created unto this time, neither shall it be." Meaning there are horrible, horrendous, evil abominations that are ahead of us, not only worse than anything you can document on the earth today, but more so than anything that's ever happened in human history. This is what this worship of humanity, of the mind of man, and our ability to solve our own problems, this is what's going to get us. The end result of that thinking and that philosophy, which I told you is part and parcel with communism, and that's where we're headed on a global scale, the end result is going to be the most horrible manifestations of evil and abominations and human misery and suffering that's ever happened in the last 6,000 years upon this globe. This is what the wisdom of man is going to produce. You can't convince them of that because they're still absolutely convinced they know better and they can solve the problems. And so God has literally given humanity virtually 6,000 years in order to do it their way, so that they are writing the history book that future generations in the millennium and the White Throne Judgment period are going to use as their textbook. And they're going to look at all that has been done by these great and wise human beings, and they're going to say, what fools they were because they trusted in their own ability to solve their problems, and they never could and they never did. All they did was drive the human family to the brink of extinction, which is the path that they're on right now, and that's what Jesus Christ says right here, is going to happen if he doesn't intervene. Such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created into this time, neither shall be, verse 20, and except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh shall be saved. No flesh should be saved, but for the elect's sake, whom he hath chosen, he hath shortened the days. This doesn't mean he's going to cut short the 6,000 years before the 7,000-year period called the millennium is ushered in. No, everything's going to be done right on time. But in essence, God has set the time to give human beings an opportunity to manage themselves toward their oblivion. So it's going to marry up. Apparently, they would not destroy themselves till a little bit past 6,000. God's going to cut short, and it will end up being right on time to usher in the kingdom of Jesus Christ. But the point here, not to get distracted, is that man is on a rocket ride toward his own destruction. Believing the whole time that he's so wise and so smart and has everything he needs to solve his own problems. Remember years ago me telling you that story about, I think I was 4 or 5 years old. And I remember we were visiting at my grandmother's house in Asheville, North Carolina in the summer. And somebody gave me a kite. And I was assembling this kite myself. I was very capable, by the way, at 5. And I put this kite together and I was attaching the string. Well, all I did was attach the string right in the middle of the kite. Because to me, that made sense. And there was a neighbor. And he came by and saw me doing this in the driveway, and he came over to help me. Because I was doing it wrong. You can't fly a kite with one string just attached in the middle of it, because the thing will flop around and it will never fly. You've got to have anchor points. You got to have multiple attachment points for the string, and then you've got a stable kite that will actually interface with the wind and actually fly. Not true to the 5-year-old. I know what I'm doing. So this guy came over and basically, you know, took my kite and fixed it so that it would fly right, and I was so angry. He was right. I was the one that was ignorant. But I didn't think I was ignorant. I was mad at the guy for making my kite fly. Because it was different than my idea about truth. The truth of the physics of kite flying. And I liked my idea better than his. Well, that's how God sees us. He has the wisdom and the knowledge to know how to make us happy and to succeed. But we think we know. We don't need God. We've got it all figured out. Who are the ungodly? The ungodly are simply people who do not take the true God into consideration in what they do. So you read all about in the Bible where God speaks of the wicked or the ungodly, all those bad people, I'm glad I'm not one of those. But as we were taught in God's church from the 20th century, the ungodly simply refers to anybody who does not take the one true God into consideration with the choices he or she makes. Which means you can be a member of the true church of God. You can be a baptized member of the true church of God and have a down payment of the Holy Spirit, and you can still be ungodly. If you're not taking God's instructions into consideration with what you do, you're ungodly. You are serving a false god, is another way to put that. And when it's based upon the idea that came to your carnal mind that you are serving, because this is the way you want it, because your god is your belly, that's ungodly. Our belief system, the belief system that we adhere to, which is responsible for the fact that we are keeping the Feast of Tabernacles and are keeping it in designated places like where you are right now, if you are in one of those places with other brethren of like mind. Our belief system is based upon acceptance that there is a higher power, intelligent life in the form of a God who did create all that exists, because this God has all power and all majesty. It is our belief, our religion, our primary driving force, that this God has expectations of us and also has made us great promises for a reward. We're seeking to learn to bow before that invisible God because we believe he's real. We believe that he holds our lives in his hands, and that the only way we will ever be happy is if we really learn to put him first. He loves us. He's given us a way that will make us happy, not sad, that will end in our glory and our greatest accomplishment forevermore. That's what we believe is true. Jeremiah 10, verse 10. Jeremiah 10, beginning in verse 10, but the Eternal is the true God. Can't convince anybody else of it. Nevertheless, it is a fact. Jeremiah knew it. We likewise know it. The Eternal is the true God. He is the living God. He's not a dead God. He's not an absent God. He's the living God and everlasting King. So he's not some being who just poof made everything that exists and then left it on its own to kind of work its way out and he went on vacation to another universe. No, he is an everlasting King, which means he is going to actively reign over his creation, which, by the way, is a key part of what we're celebrating on this first high day of Tabernacles, when Jesus Christ is literally going to be the sovereign Lord who reigns over this earth. An everlasting King, at his wrath the earth shall tremble, and the nation shall not be able to abide his indignation. That even foreshadows what we already described and celebrated with the Feast of Trumpets. Verse 11, thus shall he say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, the gods, little g, the so-called gods, who are not real gods, but that human beings believe are gods, and who worship as God and give credit to the existence of the earth and nature and the laws of physics and everything else. The gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens. Every other so-called God, which is not a real God, has never been a real God, is a figment of the imagination of human beings, is going to be dispelled because it's not real. Verse 12, he hath made the earth by his power. Oh, there is a God, and it is a God of great, unimaginable, unrelenting power. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. When he utters his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He makes lightnings with rain and brings forth the wind out of the treasure. Verse 14, every man is brutish in his knowledge. We already saw those texts that describe human beings as being no better than a brute beast when they're foolish enough to ascribe to themselves the source of wisdom and the ability to take care of themselves. Every man is brutish in his knowledge compared to this God. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. Founder meaning one who originates something, one who starts something like religion, or city, or some kind of a project. We have all these founders, Do we give credit for being the first to do something that we think is important? And yet God said the founders among human beings in human history were all idiots. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. So human beings love, you know, and there's great religions that actually engage in ancestor worship. Asian religions are paramount. So they are worshiping their human founders. It's all still humanism. For his molten image is falsehood. Whether it really involves molten images like, you know, the Buddhists who literally have their little Buddha statues. Hindus are famous for all of their different statues. They got so many gods. His molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in them. Verse 15, they are vanity, meaning worthless nothing, and the work of errors. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish, meaning in the day that the one true God makes his appearance to interface with these people who have been so deceived, their gods are all going to perish. They're going to come to know that they were serving lies and deception. Psalm 1. Psalm 1 is only 6 verses long. We're going to read all 6. Again, I'm now describing our religion, who we are, what we believe is true, and why we keep the Feast of Tabernacles as a part of that religion. Psalm 1, verse 1, blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. Remember, I already told you, who are the ungodly? Those who do not take the one true God into consideration with what they do. Because this is a God who's real, and he has rules. He has commandments. We talked about those commandments last night, including the commandment to keep the Sabbath and the holy days. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. Not just ungodly like the really, really bad people, the wicked people on the earth. I'm going to say this includes the non-godly. Because that's how God views it. The ones who claim they don't believe in a God, we're going to call them the non-godly. But like it or not, they are ungodly. Oh, but they believe that they can be moral people without belief in an invisible God. And this is what many humanists do. They don't believe that moral principles of good and evil, the golden rule, do unto others as you had others do unto you, they don't believe that has to be a part of an organized religion. They think that's just natural, common understood wisdom to human beings. They don't need to be a part of a church in order to be a good person, they say. I don't need to be a part of a church, but I can still be good. No, you can't. Because everything that is truly good on this earth in the human realm derives from the character of an invisible God. He's the one that is good. And he's the one that revealed what is good. And by giving human beings a conscience, which he did, now, yes, it's true, by nature, human beings understand an element of good versus evil, morally. Because you don't have to be part of a church and you don't have to be taught the spiritual truth of God in order to understand that it's wrong to kill someone and it's wrong to take something that doesn't belong to you. Yeah, I would say the golden rule, the simplistic element of the golden rule, is something that human beings know intrinsically, which is why no human being has an excuse for violating those principles and taking advantage of their neighbor. You may not know about the invisible God, But you know when you're doing wrong in the way that you treated someone else. If you lie and you cheat and you steal, your conscience tells you that you're wrong. Now, human beings are really good at overwhelming their consciences, as the Bible says, with a hot iron. You just sear it so it stops bothering you. Down deep inside, you never get away from it because God made human beings that way. But that's still not going to lead them to spiritual truth. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. You don't learn your wisdom and your behaviors from people who don't take God into consideration in what they do, the ungodly as well as the non-godly. Nor stands in the way of sinners. Sinners, who is a sinner? Well, one who commits sin. What is sin? 1 John 3:4. Sin is the transgression of the law. Whose laws? The only God who has the right to make law. That's who. Nor stands, this is the blessed man, who does not stand in the way of sinners. You don't follow those who totally ignore the laws of God because they're going to make up their own rules however they want to. Nor sits in the seat of the scornful. And who are the scornful? The ones who think they're the smartest or the most knowledgeable or the most experienced, and they laugh at others, especially the religious. Oh, you're a part of that religion. I feel so bad for you. When are you ever going to wake up to the reality? Those are scorners, my dear friends, and the world is full of them. Nor sits in the seat of the scornful. So if you want to be blessed, don't allow yourself to fall in with people who scorn. Don't become a scorner yourself. But his delight, who? The blessed individual. His delight is in the law of the eternal. And in his law doth he meditate day and night. If you want to be really blessed, if you want to have a fullness of satisfaction in mind, let alone a better one in body while in the temporary time that you walk and breathe on this earth, then make that one true God and his law your primary force to direct your steps. Verse 3, and he shall be this blessed individual. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bring forth fruit, forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly, now by comparison, that's the blessed man who is worshiping the one true God and is not being deceived and distracted by the ungodly or the non-godly. By comparison, the ungodly, including the humanists and the occultists, are not so. What about them? But are like the chaff which the wind drives away, here today and gone tomorrow, no value. Therefore, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment. In the final analysis, they will each stand and face their God and their King. And if they are ones once given an opportunity to know him, and they will each have their chance, which is another part of what we celebrate during the annual holidays, and especially the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day, and I will include atonement, because atonement is about opening this opportunity for the entire world to come into a close relationship with the one true God, which they never had before. But once they have that chance, once they have that opportunity, and they are forced then over time to choose what they will believe, what will be their religion? And for the ones who still never become convinced, which means they have an option, but they choose nevertheless to remain ungodly, because they're going to worship their own ideas, which they will never give up. The end result, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment. Nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous, for the Eternal knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. They will be mercifully extinguished if they refuse to change their God to the one true God. So my question, my dear friends, is your delight truly in the Creator God who is Lord of heaven and earth? Is that truly your God? I'm not talking about, you know, talk, just saying it. Oh yeah, I love the Lord. No. What is the basis for your personal decisions day by day? Just by virtue of being a part of one of these convocations on the first high day of Tabernacles says there's something that you care about that made you go out of your way to make personal sacrifices in your time, in your energies, in your money, and everything else in order to be here instead of being somewhere else. Good for you. Is the one true Creator God your God? Or have we just used his name to practice our own form of humanism? And a lot of human beings do that. I told you, a lot of people who ascribe to certain religions, whether it's Christian or Hinduism or Buddhism or Islam, down deep inside, they're all humanists because they're going to use whatever their outward religion is and are going to justify twisting it to be able to do what they want to do and say that it's okay with their God. James 2, verse 19. It's not just about saying you believe in an invisible God. What good is that? James 2, verse 19. Thou believest that there is one God? Thou doest well. Good for you. The demons also believe and tremble. So James was inspired to say, it's not enough just to acknowledge the existence of a Creator God who made all that exists, because the demons know that's true too. They don't doubt it. They're very convinced of the fact that God exists, but they're not worshiping him, are they? So just a belief in God, even belief in the one true God, is not sufficient, because then we're no better than the demons. What are you going to do differently than the demons to make your religion real and valuable rather than just a manifestation of human hypocrisy? But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith, or a claim to faith, without works is dead or worthless? Faith, the claim of faith, the claim of believing in the one true God, without action to back it up in the way you make your decisions day by day, is worthless. Because then you can talk a good game with your mouth, but you're not really worshiping that God. That God is not your real religion. Your real religion is what you do. And if you always end up serving your base desires, then you prove, or I prove, God, our God, truly is our belly. No matter what we say, no matter what we claim, do you really worship the one true God who made all these that exists in heaven and earth and who rules and will rule as king over this earth? Or still is our God our belly? Oh, and by the way, you have an opportunity to manifest that during the Feast of Tabernacles on a physical basis, because you come here, if you've saved your second tithe and you have more to spend than you maybe do, so that you can enjoy at this time more than you do at other times of the year, because God wants us to come out of the world and he wants us to celebrate. But the laws of God also require moderation, don't they? Restraint at all times. A true Christian is practicing personal restraint at all times within the rules of God. And if you allow your celebrations to turn into drunkenness and gluttony and debauchery, then your God is your belly. So throughout this feast, keep it in mind, who is your real God? The one true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Or is your God your belly? You'll prove it. You'll prove it by the choices that you make. And so will I. So again, why do we keep the feast? Well, because we believe that this God is real. We believe he's invisible. I can't prove it to anyone else, but we believe he is real. He is the primary force that holds everything in heaven and earth together, and he has a set of rules. And it is good for man to recognize and to obey the rules of God, likewise to show love for that God who is our Father. And to do otherwise makes us ungodly and puts us on a path toward ultimate oblivion. 1 John 5, verse 20. 1 John 5, verse 20, we know that the Son of God is come. We believe that's true. And hath given us an understanding. He's opened our minds by a calling. We didn't deserve it. We're not smarter than other people. But by God's calling and opening that understanding, then he makes it so that we can be wiser. If we hear him and if we take his instruction. That we may know him that is true. And we are in him that is true, even in his Son, Jesus Christ. This is the true God and eternal life. That's our religion. The true God, who is offering us a grand, glorious future. Immortal life in his glorious family. There's nothing that beats it. Psalm 146, verse 2. Psalm 146, beginning in verse 2, while I live, says the psalmist, I will praise the eternal, meaning the one and only true God. I will sing praises unto my God while I have any being. Put not your trust in princes, meaning in human leaders, including yourself. You are the captain of your own ship, first and foremost. Don't trust yourself. But not your trust in princes, nor in the Son of Man, in whom there is no help. The humanists don't believe this is true. But it is. His breath goes forth, meaning these human beings. His breath goes forth, he returns to the earth. In that very day, his thoughts perish. There is no immortality of the human soul, the human being, apart from a promised resurrection from the dead to come. Because the end result otherwise is the extinguishing of every thought and that body returning to ash. Verse 5, happy is he that hath the God of Jacob for his help, if you pick that to be your God, whose hope is in the eternal his God. What about this God? Verse 6, which made heaven and earth? You're not talking about the false the faux gods created by human beings that they bow and scrape before. The Lord is God, which made heaven and earth and sea and all that therein is, which keepeth truth forever, which executeth judgment for the oppressed, which giveth food to the hungry. The eternal looseth the prisoners. He is a good God. He really is. The eternal openeth the eyes of the blind. The eternal raises them that are bowed down. The eternal loveth the righteous. The eternal preserves the strangers. He relieves the fatherless and widow. But by contrast to that God, but the way of the wicked, he turneth upside down. The eternal shall reign forever. Even thy God, O Zion, unto all generations, praise ye the eternal. This God's going to win. This is the powerful one that you want to put your bet on. This is the one you want to pick to become your personal God. And not just in name only. If somebody asks you, what's your religion? I'm a member of a church of God. No, I'm talking about picking this God and then showing with diligence and urgency that he is your God. Because you act day by day like he exists and like he is the author of all that exists, including the laws which govern your environment, with the potential to allow you to be happy and to rejoice or else to be cursed and ultimately to die. So if you bow truly, if you pick that God to be your God, and then if you follow his program, because he's a good God, he's going to offer you the greatest riches you could ever want. And you're going to have them in his glorious family for all eternity. So why do we keep the feast? Because we believe in this Creator God who is real. And then this real God has a set of instructions, commandments. And he says if we obey them, then we show respect and he'll give us good things. So we believe in this God. We believe that he said so. And that's why we keep the feast. Next time, what else is a good reason to keep the Feast of Tabernacles? I have a lot more.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented Belief in God, the second message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Why Keep the Feast? Given for the afternoon service of the first high day of the Feast of Tabernacles in Yahats, Oregon, October 17th, 2024.